This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 69 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Our guest tonight is someone who I think that we all look up to some degree. She recently made a huge splash at last weekend's SCG Invitational, where she finished in second place. She is our friend, Jadine Klemperens. Hello.
Was that intentional? A huge splash?
That's a good thing. What, you don't like splashes?
I'm a fish.
I didn't even plan that, I swear. Where did your name come from, by the way? Like, you're known as the Quiet Fish on Twitter. What is that?
It was originally Quiet Buys a Fish.
Where does that come from?
I was in high school and thinking, and it occurred to me. And that's it. That's the story.
It occurred to you that you were quiet and that you bought a fish? That you were going to buy a fish?
You know, I've never actually identified with the fish.
No?
It's just a thing.
You're not an Aquarius or anything? That's the fish sign, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess I just never understood people identifying with their names until recently.
That's such a foreign concept to you, huh?
Well, I get it now.
Well, we are so glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. This is fun.
Yeah, we had originally asked you to come on the show right before we went on our vacation, and then all of a sudden that happened, and you were gracious enough to postpone your appearance. And when we saw how well you were doing this past weekend, we were hoping that maybe you would be okay with coming on and that you'd be all rested, and you immediately said yes, and we're so happy that you're here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me back.
Absolutely. So for people who live in a cave and don't know who you are, why don't you tell our listeners a little something about yourself?
Jade Klemperens. Most people call me Jadine these days. I play Magic.
When did you start playing Magic?
Thank you. I started playing Magic back in Shards of Alara at school. Did a bunch of drafting, started playing competitive later than that by a good 3-4 years, probably. Oh, geez, what was the standard format where I play Huntmaster of the Fells and Naya and everybody else plays Jund?
Innistrad standard?
Yeah, Innistrad, but it was the block after it? So Innistrad Return,
RTR.
I think? Yeah, Innistrad. So that's like where I really started, in my mind.
Yeah. And for as long as I've known you, you've always been competitive. Like when I had you on the deck tease, you know, you had indicated that you really don't get into like game days and pre-releases, that your goal is PTQs, you know, GPs, getting on the pro tour. What, you know, drives you to be so competitive? Like what about that appeals to you?
Speaking of game days, there was a game day, or there was like a PPTQ like a couple sets ago that was on the same day as the game day, and the store was having a PPTQ, and then you could drop and enter the game day. I did really poorly at this PPTQ. I'm like 0-2, and I'm like, man, I don't want to keep playing. I want to keep playing standard, but I don't want to play this game day. What am I supposed to do? I don't want to play the game day. I hate game days. I can't possibly play this game day. I don't want to do that. And then one of my friends is like, just don't drop the PPTQ. Play it 0-2. And I was like, oh, okay. that works. It was a free game day. It was 0-2 drop and play the game day for free as like the rebound event, and I just kept playing the PPTQ. Anyway, so I don't know what drives me to be competitive. I guess I just like competing, like battling. I was like obsessed with, you know, fantasy and swords when I was a kid, and I was like, man, I wish I could be a knight. That sounds way cooler than everything else. And then I was always like convinced I would be the best sword fighter. So there's no such thing as sword fighting for me, so I play Magic instead.
And you've been very clear about the fact that you want to go all the way with this. Like you want to be on the pro tour, you want to make a living playing Magic. Like that's fantastic.
Yeah, things shift. I still want to play a lot of Magic. I don't know if I'm as married to making a living playing Magic these days, but...
What changed?
I That's a hard question to answer. Basically, I was writing for TCG Player for a while. I think I did that for a little over a year and decided I wasn't enjoying it. Like, I guess my relationship with Magic isn't something that I can just sustain all the time. Like, I go through periods of not wanting to play, and when I'm trying to do it for a living, I just can't. And my results were suffering, so I eventually gave up. And then in the two events since I came back from my 3-month break, I top 32 in Open and did all right at the Envy. So I think I made the good decision.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because we talked a little bit about that in the pre-show, about there were a lot of comments about the fact that you had retired, or that people were surprised to see you. And I did see the R word get tossed around a little bit of, you know, you took a couple months off and people just assumed that they completely didn't consider you. You know, they thought that you were just out of the picture. And like, how did it feel to hear that? Like, did that bother you a little bit?
Not really. I mean, like, egotistical enough to be happy they weren't like, oh yeah, spiked another event 2 years later. Finally, see you again in 2018.
And so tell us about your weekend. I mean, how much planning did you put into this, to the Invitational?
We got the hotel like a week before.
Week before. That's some Katie Neal shit right there.
Oh, yeah. Wait, is that like a lot of preparation or a little preparation? I can't tell.
Katie's known for picking her deck like, what, 24 hours before?
Or like the morning of. Let's be real. It's usually like last minute, like, haven't made a deck list, and they're like putting up the seatings for the thing. I should probably fill one out.
Aren't you a judge? Don't you guys hate that?
Don't tell anyone.
So you got the hotel the week before.
Yeah, that was early for us. We were prepared for this one. Yeah, I got the travel group nailed down within 4 days of like the event. That's all right. I guess I waited till the last minute.
I like
Katie's like, wow, a week, that's a lot of free time.
I mean, I knew I was going to the Envy. Like when I like took a few months off, like I knew the Envy would bring me back if nothing else did. Like it was 4 hours away, one of the biggest tournaments of the year. There was just no way I was missing it. So I mean, ever since they put up there's a New Jersey Invitational on this weekend, I was like, all right, I will be there.
And so day one happens and you kill day one, and then how are you feeling going into the next day?
I didn't really feel like I killed it. I don't know. Like I 4-0'd standard to close it out, which felt pretty okay. 3-1 with Jund in modern that first day. I felt okay. It was like they've just been in that spot so many times with like a reasonable record, and then day two falls apart. So I wasn't super excited.
Wow. And then you found out you made day two, or you found out you made top eight. And I remember you saying something on Twitter that you were going back to your hotel to play tests and you needed Sharpies because you didn't have Sharpies.
Yeah, I didn't pack a Sharpie. I've never thought of that.
you know, you are kind of at the level where you should probably be carrying a Sharpie. Aren't people asking you to sign things?
I retired, Aaron. It's been a while.
So what was that playtesting like? So you find out you made top eight. I mean, is there any room to enjoy yourself, or are you immediately just making proxies and grinding away?
I made top eight. I collected people. We left. We drove to Ruby Tuesdays. They had a 25-minute wait, and we weren't going to have any of that shit. So we headed to Burger King, no wait, Wendy's, no wait, Pizza Hut. Oh, wait, was that a diner? Okay, Pizza Hut. Wait for food. Take it back to the hotel room. Our hotel room was 4 people, and, like, 2 of them decided they wanted to go home rather than play a classic on day 3 or watch me, which is, like, pretty lame, but whatever. So they left, so it's, like, me and my roommate left, and we proxy the deck up after begging one from the front desk and head over to the hotel bar, have a drink, proxy the deck, go back up to the hotel room, play 2 games, and I'm like, I'm actually too tired to get anything out of this. I know this matchup. I'm going to bed.
Wow.
So,
and
yeah.
And then you... I'm sorry.
I played 2 games, yes.
Wow. Secrets of Grindr's 2 games.
I'm doing it right.
Katie's like, I can do this too. So you show up for top 8 and then you proceed to, I know that you and Brad have a very colorful past where he tends to beat you, doesn't he?
Actually with this last one, I have it down to a 1-match deficit. We are now 3-2 with him ahead. I was 3 in the hole at one point, so we're doing great.
So you took down the Jeskai Control player,
yes.
And then you take down Brad Nelson, and yes. Then it's you against elves.
That's accurate.
Okay, and I understand that a mulligan happened, several mulligans?
I don't know what to say about the elves matchup. I mean, like, I'm kind of out of my depths in modern. I played Jund at Syracuse last weekend. That was the first time I had touched the deck. I don't think I've ever played against the elves deck in modern with any deck before that finals. And we didn't test against it, like, at all. Like, we barely considered it, even while the Majors Lomergan match was going, we kind of thought Majors would win, so we were like mostly thinking about that, and then it became clear that wasn't going to happen, but it happened so fast, and I was just kind of like thrown into it. I've already rewatched the footage trying to figure out how I could have won that. I mulliganed to 6 game 1. I should have mulliganed to 5. The 6 wasn't good enough in retrospect. Game 2, maybe, I don't know. Game 2 is rough. It's probably the game where if there was a game I was going to win, it was that one. And then game 3, I mulliganed to 5, and there was nothing anyone could have done.
Yeah. And so you finished second place. And so where do you go from here? You know, is this sort of like the shot in the arm for your career?
No.
No?
I am going to every Open in Season 3 and hopefully going to try and qualify for the Players' Championship, but... I don't think we're changing from my goal of, basically I've changed what, pro player I'm trying to emulate here. Like, for a while I thought I really wanted to be like a Brad or somebody who, like, you know, publishes all the time, plays all the events, and is like the grinder archetype, I guess, of the professional Magic player. And now I'm trying to be like a Rietzel or a Finkel or someone who just kind of plays the pro tours and crushes them, but does other things.
Yeah. Well, I think you can do it. Like I said, we're all big fans of yours. My Twitter feed was just lit up the whole time, and you know, people were so happy for you, and I was even looking at the hashtag, and you were getting a lot of love this weekend, and you know, hopefully you keep doing whatever it is that you want to do, because whatever it is, we'll follow you anywhere.
Yeah, there was a lot of support. It was great.
Yeah. What was that like though? Your mentions must have just been a pile.
Yeah, Emma asked me about it at one point, and I was like, I don't know, at least 20. That's just saying 20 plus. I don't know.
Well, hopefully, you know, we're going to talk about some fun things today, and we look forward to hearing your opinions. So let's talk about some other things that happened this past weekend. So, Chris, you and I went to PPTQs.
We did.
How did yours go?
Mine did not turn out the best, but I was still pleased that I got to play some matchups that I had not had an opportunity to play against before. I got my wish. I got to play more Infect. Yay, me. So that was a little less than ideal. That was what I had to face round one. So I have to kind of rethink how I want to assess Infect, if there's much that I can do versus them, or if I should just be like, this is just going to be a race and they're probably going to kill me, but I have to try not to die. The first game was pretty just cut and dried. He had to mull to 5, and so I was like, okay, I got this. This is probably going to be fine. No, he rode to victory on the back of Inkmouth Nexus and like just a bunch of pump spells, and I was like, shit. Well, I guess that's that. The second game was a lot closer, but he ended up just losing to like Become Immense, and I was like, okay, this makes sense. This is fine. And then round two, I had to play Katie's favorite.
Oh, God, and I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have not had to play that matchup before. And I was also very secretly angry at myself, because when I had been putting together my sideboard, when I got there, I was like, you know, I don't know that I really need this Back to Nature. I'll just take it out. And then I put in a Shatterstorm instead because I was worried about affinity. And then I'm just like, you know, that Back to Nature would be really nice right now. So that was a little unfortunate. I ended up losing to Bogles, just got swept. So I'm considering, because of that matchup, like I make little notes now for myself that I didn't used to before. And so I wrote myself a note saying, you know, to consider maybe putting a third anger in the main deck, because right now I have two in the main, two in the side. And then maybe put the Back to Nature back in if I really want to. But I think I've decided I'm just going to put a Fracturing Gust in there to try to hit artifacts and enchantments and gain life, because that would be wonderful. The third round, I had to play Dredge. He's a very new Dredge player.
It was pretty... Aren't they adorable? They're everywhere.
It was just funny because he had already gotten two warnings for something, like in the tournament, and he's like, and he was like, oh, that was close. I almost did that again. Oh, whoops, that was close. I almost did that again. And I'm just like, oh shit, this is kind of crazy. And he's like, and throughout the whole match, he's just like, one day I'll learn how to play this deck. One day. And I was like, well, I was like, from what I can tell, I'm just like, I am not a Dredge player, I said, but, you know, I can see where, you know, things might be not necessarily confusing, but just knowing when to dredge, knowing when to draw, and like making sure to do those things, because I cast a Life from the Loam for the first time in my existence like 2 weeks ago, and I was like, there's a lot of decisions to be made here, so I can definitely understand to a degree where he's coming from. So I told him, like, we'll just keep playing it. And he literally played three games. I'm like, no. I was like, you need more practice with this deck. I'm like, once you've got it, you'll probably have it no problem. I ended up losing the second game to him, and we ended up going to three. But I lost the second game because I could not get a sixth land. So I'm literally sitting there with three Scapeshifts in hand and two Titans and no sixth land. To even get Titan out. And I'm like, well, this kind of sucks. But I ended up beating him the third game. And then I went on to play Jund. And Jund is kind of iffy for me, but I actually ended up doing pretty well versus my opponent. And we went to three games. I ended up winning. The first game, I just, like, rocked it out. Like, I was surprised with myself. I just felt like I played like a boss. My sequencing, I thought, was very correct with trying to play around like Liliana's discard and like be like, okay, well, I'll discard a Scapeshift here because I still have one in hand. I'll discard a Titan. I have to make sure not to discard my lands and play this right. And then I was able to Scapeshift and be like, woohoo, now everything's fine. Nice. So yeah, I felt a lot better about that matchup. And then the last round, I ended up playing a Dredge player that I had played the previous weekend and I had beaten him. And so this time, the shoe was on the other foot. So he was able to, beat me. The first game, I had a really slow hand. He beat me. Then I was able to Scapeshift the second game. And then the third game, it was quite funny. He just had everything on deck. He was able to, he had like some amazing dredges and he had like three or four blood gas. He had an amalgam and then like one or two Narc Amoebas, and I was like, this is pretty bad. So he swung at me for like 12, I think it was, or something like that. And then he thought seized me. And he's like, do you have at least one anger in hand? So I just smiled at him and I laid my hand out for him because I had two. And he was like, oh shit. He's like, of course you would. So I'm like, sorry. So, but he didn't end up taking either of the angers. He took my Titan instead, which in retrospect was the right thing for him to do, because then after that, all I was drawing was lands. I was able to wipe his board twice, and then I just didn't have enough gas to get back on. And like everybody's watching our game like very intently, like, oh, and like a lot of people like really wanted me to win. And I'm like, nope, I'm like, I just have nothing. So he was able to win, but it was a really fun game. It was really awesome. I ended up going 2-3, but I'm still happy with how I played. I feel like I got to learn more about some matchups that I hadn't had a chance to face before and make like one or two little tweaks to my sideboard. And otherwise, I feel pretty good about Indy. My goal is to make day two. I hope that happens. If not, there's always the next one. So I'm just looking forward to going and having a good time. And I'm just thankful that I've had several opportunities to play in these BBTQs to get more experience. But I will still maintain, and I know I'm not the only one, that the whole PPTQ thing is still just kind of a little bit of a mess. And I really miss my 200-person PTQs.
Yeah, you know, the situation you described with the anger of the gods, I had something similar happen. I played Ad Nauseam this weekend, and I started off at F&M, and there was a young man who was on Rugscapeshift, and he casts Scapeshift, he sacrifices his lands, and he's taking a little while to figure out what lands he wants to get. And he's really hemming and hawing. He's like, I should get 5 pounds. He's going on. And he's taking a really long time. And so finally, I decide to help him out a little bit, and I show him my hand with 4 Angel's Grace. And I said, you know, it really doesn't matter what lands you get, because I'm not dying this turn or the next turn or the turn after that, and then you're going to be dead. And he was like, oh, man. And so sometimes you just got to kind of show him, like, it really doesn't matter.
All the feel bads.
I could play Scapeshift all day long. Like, give me your burn, give me your Scapeshift, give me your poor, you're hungry. I will play them all. It's fabulous. So I went 3-1 at F&M, which felt really, really good. I needed that. You know, I've been kind of middling with Dredge lately, like breaking even a lot. And I really needed, just even if it was one more win, I just needed something more than I had been doing. And so there was a local PPTQ, which I took ad nauseum to. And the first round I faced Infect. And Infect is my worst matchup. Like, it's so bad that ad nauseum usually doesn't even bother sideboarding, because it's like, fuck it. So he was on Bug Infect, which was a little slower, and I ended up boarding in like 8 cards, 3 of which were fogs. That's how you know shit's bad. We're bringing in fog. And I won. I beat Infect somehow. And I was so, you know, Chris, you mentioned, you know, when you win and you can't believe that you won, you're kind of like, I can't feel my face. Is this real? Can you see me? And somehow I beat Infect, which was amazing. And so I beat Infect. My biggest punt, and I'm not even sure it was a punt necessarily, was I was facing Mardu Control, and I treated it like a Jun deck because that's how it played. And it had a lot of the usual suspects. And so when I looked at my sideboarding notes, I looked and I saw that I take out Lab Maniac and I don't bring in Echoing Truth. So I'm just leaving myself with the Lightning Storm win condition. And so he goes on turn 1 and he slams down a Pithy Needle. Mm. And I had a really great hand. I had 2 Leylands of Sanctity out, and I was like, can I look at my sideboard real quick? And so I look at my sideboard and I see that my Echoing Truth is in there and my Lab Maniac. And I realize I have no way to win. I cannot win this game. And so I don't know. And so going forward, I think the lesson I'm going to take away from that is, I guess Pithing Needle is starting to see more play. Like, I noticed it in a bunch of the sideboards this past weekend. And so I think going forward, I need to not leave myself completely naked like that. Like, if I shouldn't just lean on the one win condition, like either not board the Maniac out or board in Echoing Truth just in case they play something like Revoker or Pithing Needle. And so that felt really bad because that didn't feel like unwinnable. And I could have won that one if I had just boarded a little differently. So I won the next 3. I finished 4-2, which was good for 11th place. I felt really good. It was the shot in the arm that I needed because I'd been really struggling about what deck I was going to take to Indy. And so I decided that I am going to take Ad Nauseam. And my goal is also to make day 2. I have 1 bye, so I just have to go 5-3 minimum with the bye. So plus the bye. So 5-3 plus the bye. I think I can do it. I've day 2'd before. And I'm really looking forward to Indy. And, you know, I noticed something this past weekend and over the last week, and maybe JD and you can chime in on this, but it seems like the pros really don't like Modern.
Yeah, no, Modern sucks. But
why?
But, also, just to chime in on something earlier, you didn't hear it from me, but the runner-up Jund list at the Envy had a Pithing Needle in the board, so.
Monster. But yeah, you know, it's, you know, what do you think that is, Jadine? Like, I is it the fact that, you know, Modern's really diverse right now, and dare I say it, even cute? Like, I ran into some very spicy brews this past weekend, and is it the fact that it's so diverse that you can't necessarily metagame against it? Like, what is it that the pros don't like about it?
Modern's a lot of things. So, pros, I mean, this is me talking, but this is...
Well, you are a pro.
I mean... No, I'm not. as I was reminded multiple times this weekend. So, pros are geared up for Pro Tours, where they have their boot camp couple weeks and learn a format, and this is what they do. They want to play games that... So, the big conceit of Modern, and the reason it's so popular in my mind to so many Magic fans, is that you learn something, and then it's there forever. You learn Infect, you learn Burn, and now you can play that deck in this format for the rest of time, barring Birthing Pod nonsense. So this isn't good for the pros because it minimizes their skill advantages in a lot of ways, because they don't just get to learn, because they can't have this kind of experience thing, because they're not geared towards long-term learning instead of concentrated bursts in formats.
So the thing that's, so I get what, so you're basically, you're saying that so, that, so when you pick up a deck that you've just played, you're more likely to lose to somebody who's been playing it for more than a year? Is that kind of like the skill gap?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, there's like a lot, this is like, kind of like where I think the macro reason is. I mean, like, there's a lot of micro things that people have pointed out, like Paulo's famous article from a couple of years ago or whatever, where he wants 20 sideboard slots because there's just too much in Modern, which is totally reasonable. But that's another thing that just rewards people who play a ton of the format. Like, I lost in the top, the finals of the Envy to a deck that I had literally never played a match of Modern against. That will never happen in a standard tournament. You will never play against a deck in a top eight that you've never heard of. I've heard of Elves, but you've never played against. Like, you don't have time to test against every deck. It's just basically impossible if you're just preparing for one tournament with the number of tournaments that pros play. Modern is a format that rewards, this is my format, this is what I play, and that's not something pros can afford to do.
That's understandable. So Conspiracy has been completely spoiled. Hallie, were there any cards that you were psyched for, or anything that you're looking forward to drafting?
I mean, I feel like we covered a lot of this last time, but I am just, I guess, psyched about the set in general. It seems really cool. I like the design of it, and I really like that, I don't know. I have kind of mixed feelings about the reprints. Since we recorded the last show, a number of I guess staple cards have been previewed as reprints. Cards like Inquisition of Kozilek, Show and Tell, Serum Visions. I know Saffron Olive wrote an article about this recently, saying that, you know, these reprints are ultimately really good for the environment. And I definitely am glad that they're being reprinted in this set. I don't know that this set is necessarily, like, the best place for... I don't know that, like, a multiplayer format is the best place for a card like Inquisition of Kozilek, but I'm really happy to see that, you know, it's definitely in the mix and it's getting the reprint it needs.
Yeah, so Saffron wrote an article, and he basically says that and it's called Conspiracy Can Be Our Salvation If We Let It. And I've heard people say that Conspiracy is the best set of the year. Like, there's a lot of, the hype is real for this set, and I think that one of the reasons it is being so hyped is because it is doing what a lot of sets have not been able to do, where, you know, people have been clamoring for reprints for a while. Wizards obviously has been listening. We've had, like, the Eternal Masters sets and the Modern Masters sets, but, you know, it kind of seems like they've gone a little ham here, and they're like, all right, you wanted reprints, we're gonna give you Birds of Paradise, we're gonna give you Serum Visions, we're gonna give you Show and Tell, we're gonna give you Inquisition of Kozilek. And, you know, then, you know, people were complaining that Inquisition of Kozilek is a rare now, and some people thought that that was uncalled for, and, you know, the argument came up of, well, if you folded up $100 bills in packs, people would still have something to complain about. And, you know, Katie, what do you think about this? Like, is this a good move to reprint these cards? Are people right to be annoyed?
I think it's a good move to reprint them. I mean, I'm not somebody who follows finance a ton, but as I was reading this, like, before I got to his conclusions, I was like, this seems like the best place to put all of these. Like, yeah, the flavor might be a little bit worse, and people can nitpick about that, but overall, like, this is going to drop the prices and make people able to maybe get into a format they wouldn't have otherwise been able to get into. And what I was thinking about it was, like, maybe they would think about... because, so they reprinted, like, Show and Tell, and it seems like it might lead... I mean, I don't know if this is, like, on a macroscopic level, but maybe it would lead to a lot more Show and Tell decks showing up in Legacy, which can, like, you know, warp the meta. And I was like, well, what if they printed, like, kind of one card, and they're all about the same price currently from, like, each deck? So each deck got a thing. So if you were looking to get into, like, Miracles or, you know, Esper Deathblade or whatever it may be, if there's kind of like one reprint from each and everybody just took a hit on the flavor and was like, these are the cards so people can play this format, and then everything else in the set was good, I feel like I would like that. I'm sure somebody would have a riot about that, but, you know, I don't know if... because when you reprint something like Inquisition and Serum Visions, those go in a lot of different decks, but Show and Tell... is kind of like a one-deck wonder, or maybe one in Modern too, but, you know, I wouldn't want somebody to just be like, oh, Show and Tell's a cheap, I'm going to buy into a Show and Tell deck, and then, you know, I don't play a lot of Legacy, but maybe that could be format warping.
Yeah, the flavor was also a concern. Like, people were going, well, we understand that Inquisition needed to be reprinted, but are the Eldrazi in this plane now? And then they were really, Wizards was really quick to be like, no, this is not, you know, Koth can be here, and it doesn't mean that Koth is in the storyline, and the Eldrazi can be on a card, and it doesn't mean that they're here either. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, it feels like a lot of the cards are shoehorned in because, you know, they're really, you know, getting the point across about this Marchesa story and the throne and the power struggles, and then all of a sudden you see this bizarre vampire Eldrazi, what is it doing, bashing its head against someone? It kind of takes you away from, what is that? Do we know what that is? Like, that's so bizarre, and, you know, kind of takes you away from the storyline. Like, you're supposed to be really concerned with what's happening in Fiora, and then you see things like this, and you really don't know what to think about it.
Yeah.
There was also some controversy that happened surrounding Conspiracy. Hipsters of the Coast released an article today. Oh, goody. And the headline is Introducing the 10 White Men Who Designed and Developed Conspiracy.
Oh, boy.
Hello. They came to play. And so the gist of this article is that, you know, so on the one hand, we're getting hit with a lot of messages about diversity. We have Kaya, who is a fantastic black woman planeswalker. They brought in a consultant to make sure that they did that right. We have Duretti coming back, who's a favorite, who happens to be in a wheelchair and is being given a really great storyline. And so we're seeing all of these efforts being made to improve diversity. However, when the set is revealed and they talk about the design and development teams, you see 10 smiling, happy white male faces who we all love. We love all these guys. I'm sure we know some of them. It's nothing personal, but, you know, the article was basically saying that there's a bit of a disconnect there in that they're saying one thing, but we're not necessarily seeing it where we should. And this article got a lot of, this article inspired a lot of discussion on my feed. You know, Hallie, what do you think about this? Like, do you think the article had a point?
I think it definitely did have a point, or at least it made me scour the internet to see who was on the design teams for other sets that came out this year. And it's also a lot of white dudes. Yeah. I actually looked up, Mark Rosewater writes an article, you know, at the beginning of preview week for every set that comes out where he introduces the design team. And so I looked through, you know, the design team for Shadows Over Innistrad, I looked through the design team for Eldritch Moon, and it's all white dudes. It really is. And it's sad. I know, Jackie Lee and Melissa Tora did some development work for Eldritch Moon, which was really great to see. But it is a lot of white dudes. It is very homogenous. And, I want to believe that there is change coming and it is just taking time. I know Jackie's been with Wizards for about 2 years now. I know I met her at PAX 2 years ago when she had just moved here. Melissa's been in and out of the building for, you know, 2 years or about the same amount of time. And I know they've had their hands on a lot of other things. I know there are other women who work in R&D who do really great work. And I'm hoping that the recognition is coming. It's just that, you know, they work so far out that we haven't seen it yet. But I do think the article also made a good point in saying that, you know, there are other people involved in, you know, making these sets who aren't necessarily on the designer development teams, you know, people in other areas of the company who maybe deserve some recognition for some work that they're doing. And, you know, hopefully there are some women on those teams and hopefully they do get recognized.
Chris, what did you think about that?
I agree with what Hallie just said about recognizing people that aren't just part of the core design and development teams, which is a point that they brought up in the article. And I also think it's important that the part that Rich Stein touches on about, you know, the Paul Ryan example, I thought was very telling, where you should focus on the message that you are sending, whether or not you're doing it inadvertently or you're not really thinking much about, you know, pictures that you're taking or articles that you're writing or something. The way that that can be, you know, interpreted by someone else could be that, well, are you just not focusing on these other people for a reason? Or is there a place to have them shine too? Because I definitely think that there is a disconnect in representation. And I did agree with him at the bottom where he says, you know, Wizards needs to realize that it doesn't just affect their game in like this cardboard form, but it affects, you know, people that are creating the game, people that, you know, even if they had a very minor role in something, I still feel like, you know, they should still be acknowledged, because it's like he says, you know, all these people had to come together to make this thing happen. However, you know, insignificant it may seem, whatever their role may be, it still required something from them to get this set out, to get everything taken care of. And I think that people should be recognized, you know, especially, you know, for a company that wants to be more diverse, to showcase their minorities, to showcase the women that are in, you know, their company. I think that would be a really good thing for them to do. And the one takeaway that I really took away from reading the article was talk about it, be about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Katie, JD, do you have anything to add?
It seemed to me like there's kind of two separate problems happening. Like, it seems like in this article, he's addressing both how they presented who was on the team, which was underpresented, and also kind of like Wizards hiring and basically who's working for them at the moment. And we discussed an article a few weeks back about the Wizards team being mostly white males. And it kind of seems like to me that that's something that can't just change in like a month's time span. You can't just be like, oh, well, you can't have your job because you're a white male now, even though you're good at designing stuff and developing things. We're just gonna, you know, bring somebody in here for diversity. Like, I don't think that's the best way to go about it. And he kind of says it's not, but at the same time, it seems like everybody's expecting Wizards to overnight, like, find people and bring them into their team somehow. Like, that's a thing that takes time and energy and money, you know, to pay somebody to come do that. I do agree that there could be a page where, you know, everybody who has worked on the design and development can be recognized, because I feel like that is fair. But I also feel like you can't just hold Wizards to unreasonable expectations about their business plan and be like, you have these longstanding employees who are good at their job, but we need to be diverse, so let's bring in, you know, somebody new. And then almost, I feel like that would almost seem like the token person, for a lack of a better way to put it. Like, hiring just because they're diverse almost seems just as bad as having white males to me. I don't know. Like, I don't know if you guys agree with that, but, you know, I wouldn't want to be hired just because I'm a woman. Like, that's not my goal. But I do agree that there needs to be more representation from all sides. And I think achieving that is a big balancing act.
I agree completely with most of that. Like, so you said that the article is like two different things going on here. The mm-hmm. idea that the design and development teams are all white males, agree. Probably a problem. I don't know what to say about that. And then there's the stuff about the presentation, and I have some things I could say about that. Like, so this graphic on the page, on the Hipsters of the Coast article, where there's, like, the picture of, like, the 10 white males previously mentioned. I don't think this is a Wizards graphic. I couldn't find it anywhere. I think it's, like, lifted from the two articles introducing the design teams and the development teams, so it's not like Wizards ever put these 10 people in a spot with this graphic as the face of conspiracy. Like, it's true that they are the only people listed on the credits. I don't know enough about game design to tell you who should be listed in the credits. Like, I would think maybe creative, but they get a lot of credits in, like, the stories that they write. And I know there's some of those for conspiracy with female names attached, so that's awesome. And when you're talking about something like a set, like, I mean, how much sense does it make to put legal on it? Like, how much did legal do that specifically related to conspiracy? Like, it's not like the legal team had a conspiracy team going.
Wouldn't that be fabulous?
I mean, like, I'm pretty sure any legal conspiracy team is some kind of company coup attempt, and I'm just... that can't be good for the game.
Oh, man. So when we go to Louisville next month, I'm going to call our team the Wizards legal team or something like that. Legal conspiracy. Yeah, you know, I actually really liked the article. You know, I think the article wasn't perfect. You know, some people had some valid criticism about it, but, you know, I think that, you know, there were some misconceptions. You know, I think that nobody's trying to erase what these 10 gentlemen have done. Like I said, I'm a big fan of Gavin. I know Gavin personally. Kelly Diggs is a sweetheart. I've met him before. Sean Mayne, I love. You know, it's not personal. No one's saying that these guys should not receive credit for the work that they've done. What I think people are trying to say is that we know for certain that there are women behind the scenes that are in development, that are in story, that are in creative, that are in whatever, that had a hand in this and that have a hand in the company. You know, we know it's not all dudes. We know that. But when you see a graphic, you know, when you see several graphics where you scroll down and you see picture after picture after picture, it does make you wonder. You know, it does make you wonder, well, where are these people that we hear so much about? And we've met them. We've met them at GPs. You know, we've met Liz Lamfaro. We've met Kimberly Cranes. We've read about Mel Lee. We know that they're out there, but we're not seeing them. And, you know, it really does take a village to make a set. You know, we know how hard, you know, these guys work and these girls work to make these sets. And so going back to the Paul Ryan, you know, metaphor, if you will, you know, I think it'd be a really great idea if maybe you took a picture of everybody that was involved. And that way you could maybe have your, you know, the 10 guys in the front row and then show off all these wonderful faces that did work on the story, that did work on the names, the consultant that helped out with Kaya if she was around. You know, there's a way to still give those guys credit because, like I said, they worked very hard on this. But, you know, also acknowledging who else played a part in it and also that those people happen to be diverse as well. You know, Chris mentioned the doing something and understanding how it seems to people, how it presents to people. And that way you acknowledge everybody that played a part in this. And it's kind of a win-win situation. You know, these guys are getting the credit for the work that they've done and everybody else is getting a moment too to get some credit from it. And if they all happen to be diverse and people get to see that, it, you know, everybody kind of wins there. You know, no one's saying that you have to, you know, fire any of these guys, or no one's saying that you have to take any credit away from them. I think if anything, it's more of a trickle down effect where they're saying there's enough, you know, there's enough credit to go around. There's enough room in front of a camera to go around that everybody can sort of enjoy the benefits of that. And that's the way that I read the article, at least. So. Mm-hmm. There was also an article that came out by Morrow where he talked about the Council of Colors, which I didn't know about this. I thought this was fascinating. And he basically talks about how, you know, in the last couple of sets, they've been kind of playing with the color pie a little bit. And so there was some concern about whether or not they were going to be crossing any lines, whether or not they were going to be making cards do things that colors shouldn't necessarily do. And so they appointed this council, if you will, and they assigned people different colors, or people voted for what color they wanted to be. And this was a really neat little bit of design insight that talks about how cards get made. You know, Hallie, what did you think about this? Like, did you know about the Council of Colors?
I had no idea. No. I don't know anything about color pie philosophy. it's really fascinating. I mean, listeners of the show will know that I'm not a flavor person at all, but I thought it was pretty cool that they did this. It was cool that they offered, you know, those of us who are not really into flavor kind of like a window into, you know, their philosophies and how they, you know, design cards and have, you know, checks and balances within the design team. And I thought that was just really neat.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen cards kind of doing a bit more. Like, I know with red, we've seen more of an effort to, you know, have red not be so focused on just, you know, goblins and burn and things like that. We've also seen them focusing more on the Chandra draw ability, where you can exile cards and be able to draw them. And, you know, I feel like we've seen each color kind of grow a little bit. We've seen the Den Protector Deathmiss Raptor thing, where green's been doing a lot more with recursion and things like that. And, you know, I think these are things that are really good for the game. You know, Chris, do you agree?
Oh, yeah, totally. My mind was like blown, like just reading this whole thing. Like, I'm like taking notes for myself and I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, this is like really, really involved. But I think it is really cool that, you know, Morrow knew that he was not in a position where he could kind of keep watch over the color pie and things were getting out of hand. And so I think it was smart to appoint other people to monitor, you know, these various colors, review each other's work, you know, see if cards are doing things they shouldn't be, or if there is an opportunity for other colors to try some new tricks, still within the philosophy and the flavor and the balance that, you know, those colors typically offer. And it was just very interesting to see things from like an insider's perspective from the outside and just be like, wow, it really goes into all of this just to make like maybe one card. And actually it kind of made me laugh when I was trying to think about, I wonder how many cards, like, kind of, to use like a Willy Wonka metaphor, like went down the bad egg chute or something, like because they were just like, nope, we don't want this. This is a bad deal. Like, I actually kind of want to send like him a message on Tumblr and be like, can you like share like just some cards that were just like, nope, this isn't going to make it. This is too powerful, or this is breaking too many, you know, rules for this color. So that's something that I would really like to see. And, I just thought it was awesome just how he kind of laid out like the steps they go by. Like, is this in color? Is this acceptable to bend this color? Is this unacceptable? Does this just completely break everything and we're just not going to do it? And the fact that they have these meetings, you know, and that they're trying to bring, you know, design and development together and be like, okay, is this all working correctly? And I guess, you know, when you think about even your own job and you think about different things you have to deal with, and then it's kind of like a similar concept, except they're making cards, you know, they're making sure that everything balances out right. Everything is very cohesive. And so it's just kind of interesting to see from a non-game design perspective, because I wouldn't know the first fucking thing, but I appreciate all, you know, the hard work that goes into it and the fact that they want to bring us something that is, you know, workable, is meaningful, and, you know, that stays true to what we know about the color pie in general.
Katie or Jadine, do you have any thoughts on the color pie?
So my main takeaway from the article is just, I'm glad Magic is in good hands. Like, they clearly take making the game last a while very seriously, and that's fantastic. But yeah, I'm with Hallie in that, like, if you ask me what color and effect should be in, all I know is that whatever I say is more likely to be wrong than right.
I think that every time one of these articles comes out, I'm just super stoked to read them, because I feel like Wizards in my mind is just kind of like a Willy Wonka factory. Like, you don't really know what goes on inside, but great things come out of it. And when you get to like read these articles, you're like, somebody sits there and gets to do this like all day. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, I feel like it's just astounding, because a lot of people don't think about the amount of checkpoints and the amount of work that these people put in to make a game that we all get to enjoy. And a lot of times I feel like they don't get enough credit, because, like, sitting there discussing the color green all day, like, while that might sound fun, I'm sure it gets a little tedious at times when you're like, all right, green card number 35, let's go. That's fun. But I'm glad there's people to do it, because it's fantastic.
Yeah, in that vein, I have a question for you guys. Rate how strongly you agree with this sentence. Every Magic player would love to work for Wizards.
Ooh. I know for a fact that's not true. Like, I know several people that have been, that would not want to do that. I actually don't think I don't know if I would want to. You know, I came to the realization a while ago that I'm not Wizards material. And I'm okay with that. I know I'm a handful. I'm mouthy. I don't take direction well. I get it. You know, but for a while there, you know, when the Deck Tease was doing really well, you know, I was getting a lot of people that were like, you should do coverage, or you should do interviews, or you should do whatever. And, you know, I have friends who work for Wizards. I certainly appreciate everything Wizards has done for us and for me. You know, it's no shade whatsoever, but I've applied for Wizards a handful of times and I've been turned down every time. And maybe the competition is really stiff. I don't know. Maybe it was a name thing. My legal name and my trans name are very different. I don't know. But, you know, there was a while there where that was sort of my end game, and that was something I wanted to do. And I was, you know, I was rubbing elbows with people and I was trying to make that happen. And then I just kind of realized that I'm not a Wizards person. Like, I have an idea of what kind of person they like to work with, and that's not me, and that's okay. And so, you know, would I, if they were to call me and say, would you like to work for us? I probably would. But, you know, you mentioned earlier in the show, JD, and sort of reprioritizing your goals and where you want to go. And, you know, that's just not my end game anymore. You know, it's a possibility, but I'm not driven. It's not the golden ticket for me. To go back to the Wonka metaphor, it's just something fun to think about.
Ooh. Do I think that every Magic player would want to work for Wizards? I don't think so. But I think it also, you know, kind of comes back to, do you have an interest in, like, game design? You know, do you have background, you know, in, you know, creative writing? You know, do you have something that they would want? Or do you just play this game just because you like it? And I think that I would be the type of person where if I had to be immersed in something like that all the time, then my hobby would feel like work, and then that would make me really sad. And so, I don't know, like, that's a very... It's a very tough question. Like, I guess it would depend. It's like, well, what do you want me to do? it's like I have many talents, but I don't know if any of them are within, what they would want. So I don't know. I could definitely think of people that I know that I probably haven't told them, but that I think they would be good for that company. Like, I certainly do, that they get things about games that I just do not. But for me, I don't know. It would really depend on what they want me to do. It's like, if they want me to draw blood, I can do that. You want me to take...
The wizard's official phlebotomist.
Oh my god, that would be so awesome. Or it's like, you know, do you have a family member that died? I can help with that. But I don't know. I have a few talents, but I don't know if they are what wizards would want.
You know, to be fair, though, that's one thing that always impresses me when I go visit Seattle is that even though these people spend all day playing Magic, they still love, or, you know, they spend all day making it and they still love playing it. Like, I was there. I remember when I went to Mike and Tifa's wedding and they were both still with the company. And, you know, it was, and I remember that, like, and even when I did the Community Cup, you know, there were people that had spent all day at the office and yet they couldn't wait to go to Card Kingdom and draft with us. And I remember thinking, aren't you guys, like, sick of looking at cards? And they're like, hell no. And they just love the game so much. And I don't know if that's something that they individually bring to the table. Like, they just have that kind of personality, or if it's something that the environment kind of fosters. But I didn't meet anybody in the times that I've gone to Wizards and in the times that I've been to Seattle. I have yet to meet a Wizards employee who says, you know what, I'm tired. I've been dealing with Magic all day. The last thing I want to do is play. They are so stoked because they love it so much. And so, you know, I'm not really sure if that would be a concern, because it seems like they do a really good job of keeping you interested.
Yeah, I almost feel like working for Wizards is like the little kid version of like the Olympics. Like, you're 5 and you've learned how to run, and you're like, I want to run really fast at the Olympics. And then you learn you have to put in like 22 hours a day and you only get to eat salad. And it's like a lot of hard work. And then you're like, oh yeah, well, I don't know about the Olympics. Maybe I'll watch Netflix instead. Like, but I feel like that's what kind of Wizards is. Like, everybody's like, yeah, that'd be cool. And then when they're like, oh yeah, it's work. Like, it's actually like a job. Oh, like, yeah. Work and hard and ugh. I think it gets different.
Well, but like, look at Gavin Verhey. Like, he wanted to work for Wizards when he was, you know, 10 or 11 years old, and now he works for Wizards. So I guess there are some people who can actually, you know, turn that dream into a reality.
Olympian.
I guess he's the Wizards Olympian. I mean, as for me personally, I actually really like the situation that I'm in right now, because as a Wizards contractor, I still get to play in sanctioned tournaments and stuff. I don't work in the building. I don't have any kind of, you know, insider knowledge or anything. So I still get to play in tournaments, and that's really sweet, because I do still want to play on the Pro Tour in, you know, in addition to working at events, which I enjoy. I feel like, you know, that's where I want to make my impact. You know, we talk sometimes about, like, you know, different ways that women can be visible in the community, whether it's through, you know, competing in tournaments or streaming or, you know, working inside the building. And, you know, competing is really where I want to make my impact. That's the kind of, you know, Magic personality that I want to be. And every time, you know, I live in Seattle, I'm friends with Wizards employees, and every time there's an opening, you know, they kind of tap me on the shoulder and are like, hey, you know, we need someone with editing experience. Do you want to apply for a job? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I love your company. I love your game. I love, you know, everything about it. But I feel like, you know, I don't know. I feel like my place is out in the trenches, you know, playing Magic. And, you know, like Jadine said, you know, obviously the way you want to play Magic changes all the time. I know, you know, I love doing coverage because it allows me to interact with the game and also, you know, make a living and also, you know, share stories, which is something that I also enjoy doing. But, you know, I kind of like where I'm at, and I really just enjoy being able to compete.
Yeah, I think the other reason I would be afraid to work for Wizards is I wouldn't want to ruin the fantasy. You know how sometimes the fantasy of something is better than the reality? You know, I have it in my mind what it's like, you know, when you get past the doors and what it's like to work there. And I would hate to go and have it not be what I imagined it. You know, where you know, going back to the Wonka metaphor, you know, Charlie thinks it's this fantastic wonderland and Wonka's actually pretty terrible. You know, there, once the Oompa Loompas go away and once the candy machine stop, he's just, you know, good day, sir. Good day. And he's like, what? He's like, I've spent my whole life wanting to get in this damn factory and you're a jerk. And not that I'm saying anybody would be a jerk, but I would hate to go and be miserable. Like, what if it wasn't what I thought it would be? What if I didn't enjoy it? What if I couldn't hack it? You know, there's a part of me that would like to just sort of say, I'd like to imagine it being fantastical. And I would like to imagine it being this wonderland and I do well and everybody loves me and the cards are beautiful and everything goes. And, you know, part of me wants to keep that image in my mind of it just being this wonderland. And, you know, I still want something to believe in, so to speak. And so I would be hesitant to take the job because I wouldn't necessarily want to lose that fantasy.
Okay. Well, thanks for answering that. So I asked because, like, I have this perception that, like, everybody thinks that all Magic players want to work at Wizards. Like, so it sounds like you guys kind of agree. Like, you all think that, you know, the reality might be kind of terrible, but it's all, like, a dream. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just, like, out, because that's a dream I don't understand at all. I would hate to work for Wizards.
And see, I was hoping there would be, like, some big reveal that you were, like, saving for our show, and you're like, well, on the subject, next week.
Nope. And it's like, Oh, no.
I mean, think of the downloads we would have got, Jadine. Jeez, Jadine's big news. I mean,
you don't understand. Like, my boyfriend had, and kind of has these days, but not so much, the pipe dream of game design and working for Wizards. And, like, when we started dating, there was, like, this unspoken, like, you know, if you ever go for Wizards, we're breaking up. Like, this is...
This ain't some Frank LaPorte shit where I'm going to support you and move cross-country.
No, this is like, true. For real, Magic is more important than you, and that's unfortunate, but reality. And...
So are you saying that if you know, obviously you're very good at the game and obviously you see the game in a way that people don't, if you were approached, does that mean that you wouldn't go?
Oh, absolutely not.
You wouldn't? Okay.
No way.
Aww. Oh, no. No golden ticket to Wonka of the Coast.
I would probably be the Veruca in that situation. Like, I would be the one, you know, screaming for Dredge, you know, I want Dredge. And they're like, whoop, and they hit the button and down the chute I go. Just didn't work out, girl. Nice knowing you. You ain't getting flashback. You ain't getting Dredge. You ain't getting retrace. Sit the fuck down. So, and I'm okay with that. I'm very okay with that. So is there anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
So I'm going to be casting another Modern tournament at Card Kingdom this weekend.
Yay!
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're having another one of their Modern 1Ks this Saturday. It's usually like a, you know, 6 or 7 round tournament with cut to top 8. So it should be a full action-packed day of Magic. So if you go to twitch.tv/cardkingdom, we will be broadcasting it starting around noon Pacific time. And I'll be casting. I'm really excited. I'm going to be playing lots of Modern on Magic Online this week to kind of get my bearings because I haven't played Modern in a little bit. But I have been, you know, watching a little bit of the Envy coverage to brush up on it, and I'm pretty stoked.
And while you're doing that, Chris, Jadine, and I will be sharing a house together at GP Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. You need to...
Woo!
Somebody needs to shoot me that address so I can get there.
That might help. You know, that'd be a pretty disappointing top 8 profile of, Jadine, tell us your story. Oh, I slept in a car.
Yeah. I mean, I don't need it for a while. Like, I don't leave till Friday, and, like, I can set my GPS for Indianapolis for a while. That'll be good for
a while. I was a little worried, though. You know, I've heard about your diva reputation, and I was worried that when you started doing well, you were going to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I went second at the Indy. I'm not staying with you losers. Bye. And I was like, oh, I hope she doesn't do that. Just...
Are you kidding? Like, all the mansions were already booked.
I think the best moment, though, the moment that made me laugh out loud is when you announced that you had made top 8 and I tweeted something like, holy fuckballs, and you replied, don't sound so surprised.
Yeah, like, I top 8-ed. Like, whatever. It's happened before.
NBD.
But I think this weekend's going to be awesome. Like I said, we got a very sweet house. My birthday's on Sunday. It's going to be Chris, Aaron from Turn One Thoughts. He used Jadine and I in one place. And it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be modern. I already know what I'm wearing this weekend. We're going to meet a lot of cool people. And I think this weekend's going to be dope.
Aaron messaged me after we, like, finalized this. And he's like, hey, roomie. And I'm like, because my lease is up. And, like, our landlord was talking about possibly, like, if we were interested in a roommate, he'd had some inquiries. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because I had nobody mentioned him to me, but I got it all straightened out. Nobody's moving in. This is great. But yeah, it's going to be good to see all you guys.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see you. Like I said, I haven't seen you in 2 years. And the last time I saw you was at GP Chicago. And so it's going to be very good to see you again. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun and we're going to meet a lot of cool people and it's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can find me on Snapchat at HalCanSan or on twitch.tv/HalCanSan.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger, MeanMugger, or twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG, or Snapchat, Katie.Neil14.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ. My Snapchat, because I'm a slacker, I've stopped taking pictures of food and animals and other things, but it's Cryptic Command with K's. And my blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I know I said something was coming, and it is. I'm just being slow about it because I want it to be perfect.
And Jadine, how can people find you or get a hold of you?
Jadine, you can find me on Twitter at TheQuietFish. You can probably find me on Facebook, but don't. I won't respond. And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/scglive, not to sound too conceited.
And they say that I'm the diva.
Well, you know, I can live up to this. This is fine.
Well, Jadine, thank you so much for coming on the show, especially, you know, so close to your success at the Invitation. Like I said, we're all big fans of yours. We all consider you a friend, and we're really glad that you could join us tonight.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad my name could get big enough to make it on the show.
It was never that. It was never that.
I know.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. It's OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. The show is on Twitter at TheGFBracket. You can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. And you can find us every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.